It's the Good Glow podcast with Jamie Crawford. This season of the Good Glow is brought to you by Dove Advanced Care Body Wash. If you're looking for that extra step in your self-care routine that goes a very long way, this is it. Dove Advanced Care Body Wash is powered by 24-hour renewing micro moisture technology, which means it doesn't just clean your skin, it actually nourishes it too. Millions of tiny moisturizing droplets get to work as soon as you step into the shower, and even better, keep working hours after you step out. So if you're ready to treat your skin to something truly nourishing, Dove Advanced Care Body Wash is available nationwide. Trust me, your skin will thank you. Yes, you heard that right. Jamie Crawford has finally twisted his arm. He is back on the Good Glow. Jamie, actually, do you religiously listen to Soul Sisters?
No.
Because your name comes up a lot. And sometimes when we're recording Soul Sisters, I'll hear you come into the kitchen and I'll just kind of gently whisper your name to Claire so you don't hear that we're talking about you. But I think it's only right that I get you in today. We're 10 years married. We have been through one hell of a 10 years. And I finally feel like we are in a new chapter. So after the diagnosis, after the waiting for Tali, and there's this kind of feeling of contentment at the moment. Do you kind of feel that new vibe?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm glad you actually brought that to the forefront, because I think, you know, given the context of us working together, being really busy, having a little baby, you sometimes just are in the process or in the cycle. And I'm probably not good at pausing and going, actually, is there something else going on here? And yeah, definitely feel like we're moving to a new phase or chapter. And that's a bit scary at times, because we've had 10 years of a lot of challenges. Or longer than 10 years, 13 years, really. 10 years of marriage, but 13 years since I was diagnosed with MS. And that was the first big challenge that we faced. And I think you can just be in this ready to go for the next big battle cycle, and it feels like life is settling down a bit, and bringing that to the consciousness is an important thing, I think.
Yeah, and like, I think for me, even saying that out loud kind of gives me a little bit of a fear, because I don't want to jinx anything. But I think to be normal for us as a couple, and I hope that other people listening to this will be able to relate. So I've said it so many times that I feel like we operate really well in a crisis, and then coming out of crisis and back to normality sometimes feels like strange for us.
Yeah. I think, like, I was thinking about this in the car on the way from dropping Tali off to my mum to be minded today, that we are conditioned for battle, right? And then not with each other, just for the battle that may come. So, you know, going back 13 years, that was my diagnosis with MS. Suddenly you're like, okay, we have a fight in our hands here. And then there was, you know, my dad becoming sick and dying of cancer, and then you getting cancer. And then the next stage of it was the surrogacy thing and the challenges we faced with that. So it's like big life battles over and over and over again over the period of 10 years of marriage. You're automatically conditioned to almost be on alert for the next thing, and then letting your guard down and maybe relaxing a little bit probably feels uncomfortable to us a bit, because we haven't been there maybe for 13 years. And then suddenly we're kind of both feeling a little bit like, oh, this is nice and everything's going well. And like, geez, yeah, like, you know, it would help if we won the lottery or something like that, you know, like life would be easier then, certainly. But like, we're working hard. Business is going really well. We're doing really good things. We're doing, you know, all these international running events. We're doing the show, the concert hall show. We're doing, you know, podcast after podcast. Everything's going really well. So you're kind of like, what is this feeling? Is this a little bit weird, or how do I navigate this now? Because the wall, to some extent, or the precondition to battle is there all the time. It's like, I suppose, and given I'm a huge American football fan, those guys go into those games absolutely pumped up, like ready to hit the guy, tackle the guy, block a guy, do whatever they're doing. There's no way they just come out of that game and are automatically like chilling out or relaxed.
Yes.
So I think that's a good analogy for like our life. It's like we're coming out of the game or the big, you know, physical battle, whether it's a rugby match, American football match, anything, like, and you're not automatically just chilling out, sleeping in the corner of the dressing room afterwards.
Yeah. Do we need to like go on a retreat or something? A silent one.
Yeah. By myself. That would be amazing.
I was thinking about this just when you were speaking there, just about the big battles. And obviously, 2 years ago, we were getting ready to go to Tbilisi. And every time I think of Tbilisi, I have the biggest lump in my throat, because I would do anything. If I could go back and relive any time in my life, it would be to Tbilisi. It was the happiest I have ever been. And obviously my happiness continues because Tali is here and she's amazing and just the light of our life, her and Pia. But did you feel like I was really happy in Tbilisi?
Yeah, there was definitely like a different energy to you, and you were, I think it was the anticipation or the build up of the previous 4 years or whatever it was that we went through to get there. You know, there's an excitement in that. It's just that, okay, we're here now. And then there's a different level, obviously, when Tali came along, of joy and contentment and happiness and warmth and whatever. And the thing about Tbilisi as well for me was, it was almost like being on another planet, because it was quite a different place, even though it wasn't. Like, it's quite Western, but it is quite different place to live. So there was this weird, like, it was like a weird bubble of happiness. It was like, because there was no context to, there was no familiarity to life there. It was all so new and so different. And then navigating that within this little happiness bubble was amazing. Like, I dream about Tbilisi twice a week.
Do you?
Yeah. And I think about it all the time. And I was even talking to Pia about it today. Pia was sitting up at the breakfast bar having her breakfast this morning with Tali. And she was, and I'm getting a bit choked up so thinking about this. She was saying, we should wait to go back to Tbilisi till Tali's 7 so she understands and she can see it and she can whatever. And I was like, yeah, definitely. And Pia was like, I'll be 14 then. I was like, oh my God, you were like 5 or 6 when you were there. So like, it's a huge, that'll be a huge thing for us to go back. And it's really important for me to bring Tali back there. And like, we should go for like a month again, not like for 2 weeks. We should go and live there again.
Yes.
And immerse ourselves in the Georgian culture in a way that we probably weren't able to do when we were living there in the cycle of the surrogacy thing.
Yeah. First of all, what sprung to mind for me there was like, if we went back and Pia was 14, we'd literally have to stay in the same apartment. We'd have to go to the same places for dinner. We'd have to do everything the same. But do you ever look at Tali and see the Georgian in her, even though it's not in her DNA because she's our embryo, but there is definitely something different in her, isn't there?
Yeah, she's a bit like, she's different. She's different, very different to Pia. Like, she's way more boisterous and outgoing. And yeah, there's a different energy to her. And I think that's because of what she went through. And, you know, I firmly believe that she is the way she is. Like, she has no fear. And she's got no fear because she traveled border after border, trains, planes, automobiles, a couple of thousand miles to even exist. So I think she's a bit like, I'm here now and you can all get on with it. And by the way, I'm doing this, and if I don't care if you think I shouldn't be doing this, I'm just doing it. Mm-hmm. She's that kind of kid. So I think that's, you know, due to her journey.
so special, and P is the best big sister. I wanted to also do this podcast today because during the week, I got a clear mammogram. Now, I'm also scanned. I've got my scans coming up, an MRI, but I got a clear mammogram, and that I counted it up in the middle of the night last night when I was awake, and that is 8 years cancer-free. I also wanted to acknowledge that you're 13 years on from your MS. You did an ultra marathon last week, 57 kilometers in the mountains. And I just want to have this podcast in the world for any young couple or any couple who are facing a diagnosis, facing into an absolute, for want of a better phrase, shitstorm, and are facing something that they believe to be unimaginable, to have us to look at, me 8 years on, you 13 years on, and to find a glimmer of hope in our stories.
Yeah. I guess that's, you know, your story is, to me, incredibly inspiring, and like what you've been able to do mentally post-diagnosis and recovery has been amazing. And for me, I personally, it's not a clear objective of mine that I'm going out to do ultra marathons to sort of inspire people. But if it does that, then that's amazing. I do it for my own sense of achievement and pride, and to challenge myself more mentally than physically. There, it's a mental thing for me, so that's why I do it. But if that helps people in some way, and I get messages from people all the time that have just been diagnosed, and they see what I've done, and it gives them hope, and that's amazing to me. And I always send them a DM back saying, "Here's my phone number. Give me a call. I'll talk you through everything." It's nice to be able to be in this position, because I'm very fortunate that my health is good still, and I never thought it would be 13 years later. So I'm blessed for every day that I can do that sort of stuff.
What was the toughest moment on the challenge, do you think, last week?
I was thinking about this as well this morning, and that I don't really remember it. Right?
Okay.
And it's not because it's like, it was so horrendous. Like, it rained from 9 a.m. literally as the gun went off to start the marathon, it rained. And it was still raining like the next day. It hadn't stopped, and it was just getting heavier and heavier. And so it was freezing. I was running through the mountains, like 2,000 meters of elevation or whatever. But I don't really...
Sorry to interrupt you there, but just to give people context, you did the Kerry Ultra in...
The Kerry Way Ultra in, a part of it. So 60K from Sneem down near Dingle, right the way up to Killarney.
I kept saying last week to people, because I went for a run with our run club in Killarney, and I kept going, "He's in Sneem. What is that? What is it called? Sneem?"
No, just Sneem. I'm sure the people of Sneem are delighted to hear their town got a new H. So I don't really remember much of it because it's so challenging at the time. You cannot think about anything else bar that present moment. Because like at one point I was running down this hill that used to be a trail, but it was like a stream. So I couldn't really see what was under my feet. It was rocks. It was loose rocks. You were just running downhill like pretty fast in this water for like a kilometer and a half. And I remember thinking it was just the most amazing moment. Like, so I remember that moment. And there's loads of little moments like that. But like overall, I wasn't like, "Oh, wow, look at that thing. This is beautiful." And I'm thinking about this now because you're so present and fixed. And that's why I do it.
I remember obviously the rain was biblical. And so we couldn't go to Sneem.
But if you went there, there'd be nobody there.
Yeah,
because this doesn't exist.
I'm not welcome there. So we got into the car. There was brollies, rain jackets, like literally floods, and we were tracking you. It says you were going to come in at 6:10. So I got into we rented a car, we flew down, Joe, my stepdad was crewing for you, so he was gone ahead just to make sure that he had everything ready for you. So it was me, Mum, Tally and Pia, and we get into the car and we're in this traffic going down to the finish line. And I said to Mum, just track Jamie there, because I just saw out of the corner of my eye this guy hobbling down the road with two poles. And I didn't realise that you actually came through the town. So Mum was like, oh, he's just back at the hotel. So I do a U-turn. Of course, Pia likes structure and everything to be going according to plan. So Pia starts screaming, no, we're going to miss him at the finish line. We're going to miss him. No, no, no. And then Mum is like, oh, and I'm doing a U-turn. And then we're bombing it up the road then to go find you. And Tally just goes, me scared. So anyway, we found you and we were beeping, and Pia was like, I don't know if we made the right decision. And I said, Pia, even if we miss Daddy at the finish line, I just had this sense that he needs us now. And I hope I was right.
Yeah, no, that was amazing. It was such a surprise. And you asked me at the finish line, are you emotional? And I was like, no, I'm not really, because I had been. Because when you came along and you were beeping, I was running that last like kilometers, a kilometer 56, I think, or whatever it was. And it was absolutely bucketing down then, and I was just soaked and freezing, and I kind of started to cry as I was running, and then I was like, this is not helping my running. I need to just get this finished.
More water.
It was really, that was my emotional moment, and it was lovely.
Oh, I'm so glad, because I did say to you at the finish line, like, you know, you can cry. I had this question for you, like, looking back on the 13 years, is there anything different you would have done when faced with your diagnosis back then?
It's easy to probably say loads of things now, but like I was very, very anxious about the immediate future back then. And like if I'd have a big relapse and what that would mean. It was just a very much a fear of the unknown in the immediate future, if that, you know what I mean? You're thinking about, like, what happens if it happens tomorrow? What happens if it happens tomorrow? It was very much just only thinking about the short-term negative impact of the diagnosis on myself. And if I look back and I say to people, when I'm touching base with them, if they DM me or whatever, you know, it's a very different illness now to what it was even 13 years ago, or even 10 years before my diagnosis. When I was diagnosed, there was only three different types of medication. Now there's so much that basically keep the illness at bay. There's so many options for people, and it's just such a different place to be now. Back then, I just didn't know anything about anything. I just absolutely panicked, and my default was to go to a negative space. And I wish I could look back and go, everything will be okay. You're going to be fine. My dad said it to me. He's like, you're going to be fine. I know. You remember him poking me in the chest, being like, you are strong. You're going to be fine. And my dad was real physical, and like, he, instead of hugging you, he'd punch you in the arm. You know, he was real like that.
But also the most gentle soul on the planet.
Yeah. And I wish I believed him.
Yeah, and I wish your dad like could have spoken to himself a bit like that, you know, because he was such a softie that he got sick, he fell apart.
Yeah, he was the softest man in the world, but also the strongest man in the world as well.
Yeah, and he lives on through you.
Yeah, I was thinking about him a lot and on the run in Killarney, actually, being like, he'd be very proud of me here. I think he would.
That's when I was speaking to Spencer last week, and he said that, like, when he's out there, he connects to his brother who passed away. And I think you do go to this different place, and that's an okay place to be sometimes. And maybe that's why you do these extreme things, is to connect on a different level.
Yeah. And you that's what it brings out in you. That's probably unconscious reason why I do that stuff, is I feel you really feel it. Like, I could feel his presence with me, being like, go on, you know.
I think so obviously now we work together a lot, like 24/7.
Well, I work 24/7. You do about 12.
Jamie's like, why don't you sit at a desk? I was like, my desk, my work is in my brain. I don't need to be sitting at a desk. I feel like we're so different that I feel like I'm really flighty, in motion. I just get up, I have an idea. Like sometimes I'm making a coffee and then I find myself hoovering my car and I'm like, how did I get here? You know, whereas you love structure. Let's talk about the difference and how frustrating it is for you to work with me sometimes. There is magic in the madness, but there's also frustration, I'm sure, for you working with someone like me 24/7, having come from such a successful corporate background.
Well, am I just late, you know?
No.
No. The thing that frustrates me the most about working with you is that you are a really hard worker, but there's no process with you. It's like, let's do this million miles an hour, do this thing, and then it's like kind of like jumping around the place. Like you just said, you're working away, then you're hoovering your car. So there is a, but you're such a hard worker. Like you're very determined. I used to think I was probably more determined than you, but you're probably more, you have more of a determination to succeed probably in the things that you do than I do. And that's an amazing quality you have. But you jump around the place. And in the world that I come from, system and process makes things work better. And I'm like, this was amazing, but it could be better if we did it this way.
Mm.
So that's what the most frustrating thing about working with you is that you're like, on to the next thing, even though we didn't finish the other thing. Like we did it 99%, but there's maybe a 1% more there that I think, oh, we could do this little thing a bit more.
Yeah, so it's like a kind of lack of finesse.
No, I wouldn't say that. It's just a lack of, you don't like process. You won't work well with a system, like in a process. Like you don't like going through the process. You just like doing the thing and jumping in and around, and you do it all really well, but sometimes it's just mental.
Yeah. I think, obviously, sometimes I wonder if you miss the corporate life. And if I was to talk about your life then, like an example of your life back then. So you're running radio stations, you worked for Dennis O'Brien. And actually, one of the last memories I have of you in the corporate world was I was 8 months pregnant and it was a Sunday. I was going to your mum's golf dinner. It was a Christmas dinner that she has every year and you weren't able to come because you were going on a private jet to Boston with Dennis.
Yeah, we were going over to Harvard Business School to do a whole course, but cover it in like 3 days, which was intense. And I remember back then really wanting to go to that golf club dinner and kind of not wanting to get on the private jet because I just knew what was ahead of me. It was like going to be tough, but like it was an amazing experience to be in Harvard. I wanted to go on the private jet with like, you know, six other CEOs. You only got on that jet if you were like in the good books, which is a great thing. And, you know, obviously I have a huge admiration and love for Dennis and the people who I worked with back at the times. They were so good to me when I was sick. But still getting on that jet was so daunting because you're like on the jet, on his jet with these serious, much older than me. All these people were much older than me. So I was so scared.
But like when you think about your life back then, and it was so, our whole lives revolved around your career, like let's be honest. And, you know, you had so many board meetings, so many really intense moments per month that you would be working late for, preparing for, you know, doing presentations. Like it was so high level. And then now we work together. Would you say we're in a startup?
Yeah.
So like, what's it like for you to go from court? Like, do you ever miss it?
Yeah, I do. I do miss it. I miss the buzz of it. Like, there is a buzz with that, which is, you know, probably high cortisol levels coursing through your veins, you know, which does you no good. But it was high pressure, high stress, but it was also a fun thing. And it was also like, I learned so much stuff from working for Dennis. Like, Dennis O'Brien is an entrepreneur. Like, it is a corporate thing, but it's an entrepreneurial corporate thing. And there's a difference between like working for the billionaire entrepreneur and working for, say, something like KPMG at a corporate level, right? That's not to take away from KPMG. It's just different. Like, it's very structured and corporate-y, whereby Dennis is an entrepreneur. So you learn all the entrepreneurial big business skills, which is amazing. And we've applied a lot of those learnings into this business. And that's, you know, I credit those learnings for why we've been able to be successful with what we do. But I do miss the buzz of it. And, you know, I miss working for Dennis in a weird way, like, because it was intense. And he's an amazing person, and he was, like I said, so good to me. And yeah, you miss that connection. And, you know, he'd ask you these questions, or he'd have answers to things that you'd have a problem with, and you'd be like, how does he even think about that? But that's exactly what we should do, you know. So you kind of miss that mentorship a little bit. Like, who's mentoring me now? Not really anyone, you know. And it's important in life, I think, to have those people and surround yourself with those people. So there's definitely other mentors I have, but, you know, from a business point of view, that's, yeah, I miss that.
You will sometimes say random things that I'm like, that's such a Communicore board meeting thing to do. Like, give me an example of one of the metaphors or the phrases that you've picked up from Communicore.
Don't build your house on another man's land.
Yeah, you say stuff like that all the time, and I'm like, what is he talking about?
That's like, for us, that's like we can't generate all our income from Instagram, as an example. We need to do it from other, because we don't control Instagram. Mark Zuckerberg does. So let's control how we make money for the business.
A short break to thank Dove Advanced Care Body Wash for supporting the Good Glow this season. If your self-care needs an upgrade, you can choose to pamper, deeply nourish, hydrate, gently scrub or revive with 11 gorgeous variants. I can never decide my favourite, but this week I've been using the dragon fruit and coconut cream. This body wash is so divine. It smells absolutely gorgeous. It restores your skin's natural glow, giving you 24 hours of replenished, lotion-soft skin. My skin has been so hydrated this summer using this product. It's also free from sulfates, has biodegradable ingredients, and is packaged in recycled plastic bottles. So say goodbye to dry skin this season and step out feeling more beautiful and confident in your own skin with thanks to Dove Advanced Care Body Wash. On the last episode of Soul Sisters, because we're married 10 years. Actually, would you change anything about our wedding day?
Do you want me to say what I would really want to say there?
Yeah.
I probably would have had a smaller wedding.
Mm.
Our wedding was huge. Well, in my mind, it was. That compared to maybe some other weddings, it's not. But there was a lot of people at it, and I don't feel like I got to speak to a lot of people. And I also feel like I don't see a lot of those people anymore. Like, maybe that's because I'm in a different phase of life now, but like...
Well, just to give people context, we had 5 work tables.
Yeah.
We were in a chapter where we absolutely adored everyone at our wedding.
Yeah, and I'm not speaking specifically about people that we worked with or anything like that, but there was definitely people, you know, and there's people that we should have invited that weren't there,
you know,
that kind of way.
I know. Do you ever think it's funny that like the main people we kept in touch with from work were not at our wedding?
Yeah.
That blows my mind.
Yeah.
Claire Solon.
I know. Mad.
Claire McKenna.
Mad.
Ryan Phillips.
Ryan Phillips was invited to our wedding.
Oh yeah, he didn't come.
He didn't come.
Okay. Right. So on the last episode of Soul Sisters, I thought it would be really helpful to read out five things that I've learned over the last 10 years of marriage. Now, we're going to condense it to three each today. So
I didn't hear these. So mm-hmm. Are you repeating these to me now?
I'll just give it to you briefly. Like per usual.
give me the summary. Can you summarize this into three bullet points? Thank you.
On the phone. Okay. Assumptions.
Yeah.
Not making assumptions, I believe, has saved our marriage on many occasions. Not that I think we would have ever gotten a divorce, but saved a lot of hardship, I believe, over the last 3 or 4 years. So maybe it was me that was jumping to assumptions about things you were doing or things you were thinking. And actually, we've called each other out on our assumptions a lot, haven't we, over the last 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
Have you ever thought over the last 10 years that we might not make it?
No. I mean, we've gone through periods like, you know, weeks where things have been tense or something has been unsaid or whatever. But no, I don't think like that I've ever gone, right, I'm out of here. Like, you wreck my head at times, but then there's times that you don't at all for ages.
I think last year, even though we were so happy because we had Tally, I think last year was one of the toughest years in our marriage just because we were so busy.
Yeah. But the same thing actually happened in Pia's first year. When Pia was one, things were a bit ropey, like hard. We were adjusting to like a very...
Yeah, but I was so sick. I thought we were so loving to each other.
Sorry, I mean after that. So like Pia was maybe two or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
That's when you told me to go get therapy.
Was it?
Yeah, it was October. I remember where I was standing. Okay, so assumptions was my first one. The second thing is our Saturday night ritual. So I said that, like, even though there's some people who can't get out for date night, like sometimes I see date night and I'm like, we can't do that. We're so busy. We use all our babysitting favors for working that we have this little Saturday night ritual where we put the kids to bed, we put on our favorite music, we have a glass of wine and a few little nibbles before dinner. So much so that sometimes on a Saturday night, we don't have our dinner till 10:30 because that hour is so sacred for us.
Yeah. I love that hour. So especially if we're out by the fire pit and it's a nice sunny day or a warm day and, you know, the field behind our house is grass fully grown and it's kind of purpley light. It's a lovely moment. And I don't really feel like we got many of them this summer because we were away for a lot of the summer. Mm-hmm. But it's an important moment.
Yeah. So that my second tip is create your ritual. If you can't go out for date night, just do something at home for 1 hour per week.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And then number three is say yes to say no later. For the first 5 years, I think we went to battle on a lot of things. So you might say, oh, we should buy a lamp and put it in that corner. And then in my head, I'm like, I would absolutely not agree with that. And then I would say that out loud. And then we might have a disagreement about it. Whereas now I'd say, oh, yeah, that's a great idea, knowing that you're not going to go out and buy that lamp. So I've saved an argument in that moment.
How do you know I'm not going to go buy the lamp?
It's 13 years of evidence, Jamie. So I will say, that's a great idea. Even though in my head, I'm like, we are 100% not doing that. So to all the women out there, say yes now to say no later.
And I'll translate that for all the men out there. Your wives are lying to you.
Okay, so give me your three.
I think, I was thinking about this earlier. Communication is key to a happy marriage. And you say I'm an over-communicator. And I think you're maybe a little bit of an under-communicator. But communication is vital because without the communication, then the assumptions happen. So if you're just overly communicating with people all the time, I'm feeling this is the way I'm feeling, or I am doing this on this day, don't forget, I have this appointment, blah, 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 blah. It avoids any of the things. So I think communication And never, like, our one of our biggest challenges is like we almost like morph into the same person. And I sometimes think I've said something to you, but I've just been thinking about saying the thing to you. Mm-hmm. And did I say it or not? And then you're like, you never told me that. I'm like, but I definitely thought about talking to you about that. And it's like, you're in my brain and I'm in your brain, and that's not good. Mm-hmm. So you have to almost be very conscious of over communicating. Yeah, that's one big thing.
You love communication. You should have done communications in college.
No, it's funny that I used to used to run huge media businesses, which is essentially communication on a mass scale. And now I run the, well, I don't run it, but you know, I'm in it. I'm in this one.
You do run it. Finish that sentence.
I run this one. Okay. Hurry up with this podcast. And then the second one I was thinking about was giving the personal growth matters mm-hmm. in relationships. So giving your partner space for personal growth. And that doesn't mean going off and doing a mindfulness course or whatever. It means if they want to suddenly take up pottery or paddle tennis or something else beginning with P, to encourage that and back it because there is obviously a curiosity there on your partner's behalf or whatever, and curiosity is an amazing thing, because if you lose it, you become quite stuck. So it's very easy to want your partner to stay the same forever, but we as biological beings are completely changing all the time. And Jerry Hussey says this all the time, and I think that's where I heard it. But unless you are enabling that personal growth, then it's things that can creep in, like resentment and maybe the feeling of not being backed by your partner and stuff can creep to the forefront. So it's easy to stay in a cycle of just doing the same shit over and over and over again. But if you are open to allowing the personal growth and letting them do the things that they, you know, feel like will light up their soul, go do it.
Brilliant. Number three?
The third one's probably a quite basic one, and it's be proactive with like romance, and not necessarily like, you know, intimacy in the bedroom type thing, but be proactive with little things like, you know, giving your partner a compliment or buying them little gifts or presents or saying nice things to them. Oh, you look lovely in that dress. That dress is nice, or that you look great, or that tan is lovely on you, blah, 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 blah. That kind of thing I think is important because it hits home.
I look forward to you paying me more compliments.
I pay you compliments all the time, and they literally go over your head. I'm like, that's a lovely dress. Your hair looks nice. When was the last time you said my hair looks nice?
Okay, so we wrote each other one question that we're each going to read out. So do you want to start or will I?
No, I thought you were going to you're going to hand it to me, yeah, and I'm going to read it.
This is your question from me.
Is this just what? Okay.
It's not very deep.
What are you most looking forward to next year? Oh, that's a good one. I just love our holidays. I love spending time together as a family, and like, and it's not like going doing this thing. Like the moments for me that are the biggest are the most simple, like walking along the beach at night, going to a restaurant, like not even the restaurant or going to, it doesn't matter where we go, as long as we go together and there's a bit of crack and we have a bit of fun and we're together. So just spending those close times together, just sitting and being present with each other and like having the kids and just being pretty basic, but they're the important times because they're the ones you remember.
I'd love to go to Cape Cod next year because I feel like we went to Cape Cod on our honeymoon. We went after I got sick when I was in my recovery, and I'd love to go back in the after, like in the now, with the two girls.
Yeah, it's a special place for us. Anyone wants to do a house swap? They're living in Cape Cod.
Oh yeah, we know Cape Cod Karen.
Drop us a DM.
Cape Cod Karen.
Yeah, Cape Cod Karen.
Okay, give me yours. Jamie, that's not funny. That is offensive. I am raging. I feel rage.
Just read it out.
What's for dinner? Jesus!
That's the fake one. Oh my There's God. The real one.
God, if that question is just beyond. What is your favorite laugh out loud memory over the last 10 years? Oh, that's so good. There's so many times in there that we go into hysterics, like pee your pants laughing.
Yeah. And Pia gives out shit to us because she doesn't know what we're laughing at.
Yeah. I think for me, it was, we went to see the Kings of Leon, do you remember, in Manchester?
Yeah.
And I wore new shoes to the gig and I had blisters all over my feet the next day. And I went down to the Pennies in Manchester and I bought fluffy socks and fake Birks.
Yeah.
And we were in the airport, like so hanging, just so tired. And you were so embarrassed that that's what I was wearing, but I just didn't care. I was wearing them with tracksuit bottoms. And there was this other guy there and he too was wearing socks and Birks and you were saying, oh, you should go and hang out with him. And we were just kind of having our own crack in the airport. And I was like, maybe I will. So anyway, we get onto the plane and we hadn't picked our seats and the plane was empty. Remember?
Yeah. About 20 people on a full Ryanair flight.
And the guy sat down in 25A. I said, where am I sitting? And you said 25B. And I totally thought you were taking the piss. But then when you showed me my ticket, I was. And so you were sitting on your own down the back of the plane. And there must have been only like 30 people on the flight. And me and him were sitting beside each other. And we chatted the whole way home like we were soulmates. He was on his way home from India.
But what was the laugh out loud moment was when we realised that you were sitting beside that guy and you had to go up and sit beside him. And I remember kind of climbing under, I was sitting behind you, so I climbed under my seat to try and take a photo of the two of your feet together. And I think I have that photo still somewhere.
It was so funny, but there's so many laugh out loud moments. And I think for a lot of our relationship, there hasn't been much laughing, but I think that's why, you know, asking you, did you ever think we wouldn't make it? I think there's moments where I feel like I want to not kill you. Like, I don't mean it like that, but you know, as an Irish person, I want to kill you. Like, there's moments where I feel so mad and such rage that I want to get up and walk out of the house. But we have, when you strip back all the shit, we can still sit across a table from each other and really enjoy each other's company. And I think that's what's kept us together for all of these years.
Yeah, I think it's, we're still very connected.
Well, thank you, Jamie, for this catch up. I could actually listen to you all day.
Why? You do listen to me all day because you ring me and I answer all your questions.
I just wish that you could speak like this to me all day.
All right. Maybe we should just walk around holding microphones.
Yeah. But thank you so much for being my guest on The Good Glow this week. It's been a great season. I've loved every guest. Jennifer Rin, David Fitzpatrick, Dominique. Like, there's been some really deep stories and we've got 2 weeks left after this, so
Dan, there's been a male skew maybe a little bit, which is nice change of pace.
And you enjoyed the podcast with David Fitzpatrick, didn't you?
Yeah, I really did. What a nice guy.
Yeah. Okay, Jamie, thank you so much.
Okay. See you in 10 minutes.
No more private jets in your future, but at least we have each other.
What's for dinner?
Okay, huge thank you to you for tuning in today. We have some really exciting news about next year. I'm surprised Jamie didn't say it, but we are off to New York to run the New York Half Marathon, which is definitely one of the biggest highlights of my year. every year. So head over to my Instagram, georgie.crawford, for more information on the New York Half Marathon. And also, we're going to be at the National Concert Hall on December 6th. We're running low on tickets. They're going fast. We're into September. So if you want to come along for a night of togetherness, connection, fun, live Christmas music, right at the start of December, so that you will continue that festive spirit right through December. And remember what's really important. You can head over to the link in the show notes for tickets. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We'd love your feedback on this episode, and I'll see you next week.